Welcome to Booked, where two guys tell you about the books they're reading. I'm Livia Snedden.
And I'm Rob Olson. The book that we're going to be reviewing tonight is Less Than Hero by author S.G. Brown. This is a little bit about him, his bio that we pulled off of Amazon. S.G. Brown is the author of Big Egos, Lucky Bastard, Breathers, Faded, and the Breathers novella I Saw Zombies Eating Santa Claus, as well as the ebook collection Shooting Monkeys in a Barrel. He lives in San Francisco. Now, Booked has reviewed Big Egos, Lucky Bastard, I Saw Zombies Eating Santa Claus, and Livius did a mini review of the short story collection Shooting Monkeys in a Barrel. So we're all over this dude.
I have loved S.G. Brown since Breathers first came out. So before we did this podcast, I have been a huge fan. So it was quite the coup to get him on the show. Maybe we'll have him on the show again. We'll see how this review turns out.
That's right. I failed to mention we did have him on for an interview as well.
Should we talk about some of the technical difficulties we've had to overcome just to review this book?
So tonight has not been easy on the Booked technology front. Internet problems. I blame the Irish, first of all. I'm just going to go out and say that I blame the Irish and AT&T equally for my troubles.
Oh, you blame the Irish for the potato quality of this podcast?
Yeah. Funny thing about that, right? So I recently, out of spite, because I'm a very fickle person, canceled my home internet. So I'm relying entirely on my cellular connection for internet in my life. And typically I could hotspot my phone and make this stuff work. But I think because of all the people coming down to my neighborhood to get drunk and fight each other, cell reception and my data coverage is just awful the last few days.
I also would like to explain to folks what that Rob means by fickle. Rob means I cancel my home internet because I have 30 gigabytes of data on my cell phone. So let's explain what that's, because most people be like, fuck that, man, I'll just have like 3 gigabytes of data on my phone. No, not Rob. Rob has 30 gigabytes through his phone service.
I mean, it made sense at the time, and I figured, all right, I'm covered. Apparently not for situations like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then we had a bunch of document issues, and we had to read this in paper book. We had to share a copy. So yeah. most nights, I just, you know, laid my head in Rob's lap and read him a chapter at a time until he fell asleep.
Yeah, and I ran my fingers through his hair.
Yeah. Yeah, what really happened is I read this 2 weeks ago, so I'm going to be doing a lot of this from memory. Like from long-term memory, but either way, it was awesome of S.G. Brown to get his publisher to send us a uncorrected proof copy, and we can actually bring this to you on the day it comes out. So this book comes out today, Tuesday, March 17th, I think. That's not where we're recording this, but that's when it comes out. So
right. For Patreon people, you're living in the future, past, however that works.
Future. Right, in the future. Yep, we have moved you all forward to March 17th.
That's right.
Here so, is congratulations. Yes, exactly. Here's the synopsis for Less Than Hero. Faster than a speeding rash, more powerful than dry heaves, able to put villains to sleep with a single yawn. Convulsions, nausea, headaches, sudden weight gain. For the pharmaceutical soldiers on the front lines of medical science, volunteers who test experimental drugs for cash, these common side effects are a small price to pay to defend your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of antidepressants. Lloyd Prescott, 30-year-old professional guinea pig and victim of his own inertia, is the first to notice the bizarre, seemingly implausible consequences of years of testing not quite legal drugs. His lips go numb, he becomes overwhelmed with exhaustion, and instantly a stranger crumples into a slumbering heap before him. Using cover of night, Lloyd and his guinea pig friends band together to project their debilitating side effects onto petty criminals who prey upon the innocent. When a horrible menace with powers eerily similar to their own threatens the city, only one force can stop this evil, the handful of brave men who routinely undergo clinical trials.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we talk about the synopsis for a second?
Sure, yeah.
If this wasn't S.G. Brown, is this a book you would want to read?
I would be really, really hesitant, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
Now, saying that, having read previous S.G. Brown books, I was like, this sounds awesome. But if this was something that was submitted to us or we came across in a bookstore or on Amazon, I'd be like, yeah, I'm not reading this.
I mean, like, it sounds kind of hokey. And the thing is, we know and trust the quality of Scott Brown's writing. So we mm-hmm. kind of have a leg up in this situation. But, I mean, he's introducing some really interesting and weird things and mashing them together, like the idea of common people becoming superheroes. The idea of a really deeper look at people who do clinical tests as like a lifestyle, or not a lifestyle, but like a for a living, as a livelihood. It sounds campy, I guess would be the word I would think of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have to agree. So don't let the synopsis put you off on this book, because it would me if I wasn't already bought into everything this guy does. So. Rob, how are we not living that lifestyle?
Oh, like doing clinical tests to make a living?
Yeah, if we could make enough money to do that in this podcast, like I think I'd be pretty happy.
I mean, nothing's stopping. I mean, sky's the limit, bro. We could just quit our day jobs today and start taking weird medicines. But they you have to be healthy to start with, so.
What are you trying to say? Gonna,
I mean, you had that smoking thing you did for a while, so I don't know if that's going to cause any problems.
That's true. I will not tell them about that. I'm totally going to keep that. It's indicated in the book. You know, they're also not supposed to participate in these that frequently, but they kind of do the rounds of the different trial places and then swear that they haven't been in, you know, clinical trials for whatever that time period is.
That's a good point. All right, so let's do it. We're going to do it.
That's it. That's what we're going to do. So this podcast could get very interesting very shortly as Rob and I move into clinical trials.
I'm just going to take nothing but antipsychotics and erectile dysfunction medicine now.
There you go. Jesus.
I'll be full of those, like, they're out to get my boner conspiracies.
All right. Back to the book. Lloyd is our protagonist, as mentioned in the synopsis. He's been doing this for many years. He lives with his girlfriend Sony, who is the very typical manic pixie girlfriend, right?
She does. I think she would fit the more or less manic pixie dream girl. Like, yeah. Literally, almost literally a pixie.
Yes, that's actually what was in my notes on the characters. It said that, and then said literally afterwards. So she's, you know, she volunteers places. She has a job working at a grocery store, but she also is one of those statue performers, which I didn't know they had in New York. Incidentally, I'm more used to seeing them on the streets of New Orleans. But for anybody who's not familiar, the people who stand there perfectly still until someone tips them, and then they have some way of thanking them. And in Sophie's case, she is a fairy who blows pixie dust on people who you know, give her tips.
And Lloyd himself, we learn in the beginning of the story, he is what he calls a guinea pig. So he goes from clinical trial to clinical trial, being like the control. Subject, like, so there's phases of, I'm getting this way wrong, I'm sure, but there's different phases of drug trials, and they do the first phase, which is just to see what side effects manifest to people who don't have the ailment that they're trying to treat. So this is just like the first, hey, let's see what kind of weird shit happens to people on this drug test. That's how he makes most of his living, but we learn that it's not enough to really pay the bills when you're living in New York City, even if you have a girlfriend you live with. So he supplements his income by begging on the street, just straight up cardboard sign in hand, begging on the street.
And to be fair, the cardboard sign isn't, you know, will work for food or anything like that. He tries to come up with some clever ways Which, God, I remember there was a guy like this in when we were in L.A. at Venice Beach. I don't remember what his sign said, but it was really clever and would have fit perfectly into this book. So, you know, he holds up signs. The one sign, I forget exactly what it says, but it indicates that people can call him names so they can take out their frustrations on him. You know, and then they tip him. So someone, you know, just run up to him and be like, you know, you're a motherfucker. You ruined my life. You know, and they're thinking of their dad or their boss or something. And then, you know, they throw like $2 in his little box.
Yeah. And, so that's kind of his day to day. Like that's his normal life. But early on in the book, life starts to become not so normal. And, Lloyd's not alone in his clinical trial thing that he does. He calls being a guinea pig. He has a group of friends that he's met who are also guinea pigs. And just because they go through similar stuff and they've known each other for like, I think it's 5 years at yep. the point where the book starts. They get together. They've kind of become a group of friends, and they get together and play cards and do stuff together and go out for food and everything. I think mostly like a weekly basis, I think, if I remember correctly. And mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yeah, they get together and they talk about different trials that are going on and, you know, their experiences with different venues and stuff. So some of those friends, one we're introduced to right from the get-go is Randy, who's I don't know. My notes says Studley Womanizer. He's that like good looking kind of built guy who is constantly talking to women in public places and trying to get dates and trying to hook up, and then spends the rest of his time when he's not doing that talking about his previous exploits of women he's talked to and hooked up with.
Yeah, and it was actually one of the interactions with Randy that the Brown's first kind of sets the tone for something that might be going weird. Because they're hanging out in a they're hanging out together, Randy and Lloyd, and they're in a subway train, and they're playing this fun game where Randy has an idea of a drug, and I think by symptoms or something like that, Lloyd's supposed to guess. Mm-hmm. Lloyd guesses the symptoms so he can figure out what drug it is, and which is funny in itself. But then they see a homeless guy getting picked on the train by some, you know, young punks and everything, and in true big city fashion, most people on the train just kind of ignore the situation because they don't want to get involved and they don't want any trouble, that kind of thing. And after a while, the homeless guy just kind of asks these people to leave him alone and all that, and Randy can't really handle it anymore, and he decides he's going to speak up for the homeless guy, which draws the attention of the thugs, and they come over and they start, you know, to confront Randy. And while Randy's starting to get angry and everything, suddenly one of the thugs just breaks out in this rash. And it's kind of unexplained, and then the train stops and everybody just kind of gets off the train. And more or less you forget about it, but that was kind of the first sign that some unexpected things are happening. And that leads us to not very long after that, Lloyd himself, his sort of superpower presents itself.
Yeah, so Lloyd can he can make people fall asleep. Here's what I love about this book is it's indicated in the title, you know, Less Than Hero, but we give people superpowers and the superpowers are like the worst superpowers ever, right? So we joke about that, you know, about I have this superpower, it's terrible, you know, it's something really... Either way, these are really terrible, so Lloyd can make people fall asleep. We've established that Randy can give people rashes, and when I say rashes, not like, oh, I've got a little bit of a rash, like breaking into hives, not knowing what's going on, kind of rolling around in pain kind of rashes. So,
yep.
And eventually we're introduced to the rest of his friends, so I think we're going to run through the rest of these pretty quickly. But there's Frank, who is a very health-conscious... guy who can make people gain weight. Yep. We've got Charlie, who can make people have seizures. Vic, who can make people vomit. And Isaac, who his power is that he can give people erections. Rob brought it up earlier, right, about erectile dysfunction medication. Yeah, that's Isaac is erectile dysfunction medication for people who may or may not have erectile dysfunction.
Yeah. So, and thanks to Scott Brown, S.G. Brown, for this book, reminding me that's priapism, what priapism is very cool. So the group figures out, it was kind of one of those, like, has anybody been feeling anything weird lately kind of things? And then the group all discovers that they all have these powers, and then they test them out together. And I like that the powers are essentially reflections of side effects from drugs. So, you know, it's a something in during one of those drug trials went wrong. And they all suspect like when it happened, which gives us a reasonable idea of if one of these friends was at that drug trial, we can expect that they have a power, and we know all the powers pretty early on. And yeah, so they just they band together to be this like goofy, kind of somewhat lame band of superheroes who goes around protecting the elderly and homeless people against people who are fucking with them, basically.
Yeah, and it doesn't start out like that. It starts out pretty much how, I don't know, it's kind of how I see these things happening. It starts out with them tackling minor annoyances. You know, the guy who's talking on his cell phone really loud, you know, it's just like the lady that's just generally being a bitch. It's not even that they're going after bad people at the start. It's they're going after those things that drive everybody crazy.
Oh, the douchebags.
Yeah, yeah, they're going after the douchebags and making them fall asleep or have a rash or, you know, explode with weight, you know, which is a really nice introduction. Because I don't, like, I think to myself sometimes, you know, if I had a power like that, where would I use it? I would probably mostly use it at work. See, so I don't know that I'd go out after thieves and criminals and murderers, but I'd be like, this asshole, I'm going to fix this guy. So, and I like that that's where the group of superheroes goes first.
So just to take a little, because you know we're going to have to do this. If we were to gain superpowers based on like kind of the broad strokes of our everyday existence, what would our superpowers be?
Oh, God. Yeah, my first thought was I'd just have people drop dead. I would skip all the other stuff if it was up to me. They would just drop right where they were. God, what would our superpowers be?
Yeah, I mean, those guys, like, they got them from side effects of drugs that they, you know, were using and stuff. So it would have to be prescribed to us based on something that happens regularly in our lives.
I'm trying to think of like fruit would just materialize in Rob's hand that he could then throw at people or something. I don't know. Like,
wait, what would?
Fruit. Fruit, like apples, maybe.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how that would work.
I was thinking you, like, if it was 5 years ago, I would say that you would be able to make people cough because Olivia's used to be a big time smoker.
Yeah, that would be a good one to have, and that would fit right in with this gang at least. God, what would we? What really, realistically, would we have for you?
I drink a lot of alcohol.
Oh, there you go. People just fall over drunk, start stumbling.
They just like at like a distance of like 20 yards, I can just like make someone intoxicated. That would be actually kind of a cool.
Oh, but you know what? Here's the perfect part. It wouldn't be enough for them to be like inebriated, but just to that part where they kind of say dumb things. You know what I mean? More like they are able to embarrass themselves, not like they just fall over and start puking from liquor. There you go. Those could be our less than hero powers.
Right when the inhibitions drop, that's like how drunk they are.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yeah, see, because, yeah, that is perfect. I like both of those.
I'm like, you want to do karaoke, don't you? Because that's the number one thing that drunk people do, I think.
Really? Is that... Have you done a lot of karaoke?
No. I somehow managed to avoid that, which I'm happy about.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see if we can fix that someday soon.
So there's our superpowers: coughing and intoxication.
Yep. And then, so in the book, eventually, as they kind of up their game and try to go after more important, as they realize that they're kind of wasting what they're doing on just douchebags, they kind of decide to go after, as Robin mentioned, people who are really, you know, picking on other people, bullying, that type of thing. But they pretty quickly these incidents catch the headlines. The news kind of catches on, and they're all assigned superhero names.
Not the most flattering superhero names either. I don't have them all like an idiot. I didn't write them all down, but Lloyd, who makes people fall asleep, his superhero name is Dr. Lullaby, which is pretty good. Because Isaac never really is not the most obvious one. He's the one that can give people boners. Just within the group, I think they called, I'm pretty sure they called him Professor Priapism. I know that Randy, the guy that gives people hives, was the Rash. I'm not sure about the others, though.
Yeah, I made notes on all the characters and what they could do, and it didn't occur to me to grab their superhero names. It's tough. It's tough reading a paper book.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest, there's not a lot of paper books I'd be willing to read.
This is such a first world problem, but like right now, if we were digital, we would have answers. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, we would. So yeah, now they have to be a little more careful because they're in the public eye. And I don't know how much more story we want to go into. A little bit on Sophie, as we mentioned her earlier. Through the course of doing this, Lloyd does not disclose to Sophie what he's doing, but eventually problems happen between the two of them. So there's him trying to keep his relationship together while doing this, while still doing clinical trials and begging. The interesting thing, and this is more of a story structure thing, is we get to see the headlines from the newspaper, so that's kind of how we get to see the public view on this. But we also, even though the book is told through the eyes of Lloyd, we get interludes. How awesome is that? There's interludes in this book.
Yeah, we're collecting royalties on that, I think, right?
Yep, we are. It just, you know what, it felt like a little like home. And those interludes, early on at least, kind of indicate some of the first times these people found their powers. But as it progresses through the book, the interludes are just a way to see what's going on with people that Lloyd is not directly involved with, I guess, is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah, and let's not forget that the other side of things is, while the story that we've told you so far is going on, there's also some weird stuff that's happening in the city. So there's multiple instances of people reporting that they feel like they were mugged, but they don't have any memory of the actual incident. They just kind of came to and realized that they'd lost some time and their money was missing and stuff like that. There's also people who just like freak out, hallucinating, and do crazy things. So along with like our very ragtag group of heroes trying to do what they can to help people, there's some really not so positive things happening in the city as well, and the source of those incidents is unknown for a majority of the book.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of interesting because he did he didn't quite balance the scales, so I know how far we're going to go into this. Our ragtag group, as Rob calls them, is you know, they have kind of these lame powers, but the two people who have gotten powers that have decided to go, you know, to the dark side with them, their powers are pretty, I mean, memory loss, hallucination. They got the better end of this. They're not just coughing and making people lose their inhibitions. They're able to do some pretty spectacular things.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that we would see, and I don't know if he plans to expand on this in short stories or in any other kind of follow-up books, but like these lame stories kind of, these lame superhero powers kind of evolve into something that was a little bit more refined and a little bit more like universally useful. Like having the ability to send someone to sleep is lame if it's kind of basic, but like it could actually be pretty awesome if properly honed and everything. So I was hoping to see a little bit more refinement and kind of like an expansion of powers, but maybe not.
We should probably talk about the cat.
Oh, we have to talk about, you always have to talk about the cat. If there's a cat, you have to talk about the cat.
Sophie's girlfriend has a cat that that Lloyd's not all that fond of, but what's the cat's name?
The cat's name is Vegan.
Vegan. who's really one of the first victims of Lloyd's power, which kind of sets the stage for this relationship that he has. So Lloyd, after the second time he's made someone fall asleep, thinks he might have this power, and tries to go about figuring out how to figure it out. And the only other being around him at that time is Vegan the cat. So he puts Vegan asleep, and Vegan, probably sharper than most people in this book, it realizes that it's Lloyd that did this. So through the rest of the book, Vegan is wary at best of Lloyd, and makes for some really great scenes.
Yeah, and I love the whole Vegan thing, because there's this aspect of Sophie that Lloyd lives with Sophie, and she is like the over the top crunchy granola hippie. In as much as like everything has to be organic and non this and non that, and very particular about food, not just for herself but also for the cat. And so the cat only eats organic, non-GMO, blah, 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 this and that. And Lloyd's kind of personal reflection on it was that Sophie claims that it was the cat's choice to eat that type of food, but he doesn't believe it, which is kind of funny. And so poor Vegan is living this, crunchy granola, hippie lifestyle just because by virtue of the owner that it was stuck with, which I thought was pretty funny. But then that's just kind of overall indicative of Sophie the character, because she goes around with the pixie dust not only in her job as a human statue but also around their house, because she thinks that it has healing or positive energy that it can bestow on things. So she's a little bit out there, and the poor cat suffers for it.
I only have a couple of quotes because I had to take photos of the pages in the paper book, but I'd like to do a couple of them now that I think cover the bases on what we've just been talking about. Vegan appears like a magic trick, running up to her and meowing up a storm. While he's probably just happy to see his female human, I can't help but think he's trying to tell Sophie that her boyfriend is some kind of asshole wizard, which is just goddamn brilliant. And the next line says, fortunately, I don't think Sophie speaks fluent cat.
The asshole wizard one was probably one of my favorite quotes in the book.
Yep, yep. I have one more, too, that... because you mentioned the pixie dust, which I can't believe I didn't mention that she goes around blowing pixie dust all the time. So they had just had sex, and says, when we're done, Sophie sprinkles pixie dust on my penis, blows the rest across my thighs and abdomen, then curls up... I'm reading this from a photo. Then curls up next to me and kisses me goodnight. I want to get up and go into the bathroom and wash off the pixie dust before it gives me another rash, but I can't get up without disturbing Sophie, so instead I listen to her soft exhalations as she drifts off to sleep. And then he goes on. There's another passage where he talks about... Actually, I'm going to read that one, too. Blah, blah, blah. Before she sprinkles some of her pixie dust over their leaves and soil. He's talking about plants. I think that's the main reason plants don't tend to do very well in our apartment. Pixie dust doesn't make good fertilizer. Sophie, on the other hand, blames their poor health on the lack of south-facing windows.
I've been in that situation before. Oh, not really. I have dated some crunchy hippie-type girls before, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine you probably would have. They throw pixie dust on you?
No, but I have a very in-depth knowledge of what vegans can and can't eat. yeah, down to where some people fall on the idea of yeast and honey.
Oh, because honey's from bees, and bees are an animal, right?
Right, and honey may not always be may not always be harvested in a way that's not interrupting to the bees. It might be harmful to the bees, when it's collected.
Yeah, well, you catch bees, right? And they just squish them and squish the honey out of them.
Yeah, it just comes right out of there. It comes out of the stinger.
Stinger part, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't see how that wouldn't be disrupting.
Just 3 drops of honey per bee, I think is.
Yeah.
And apparently yeast is a living thing, so some people don't want to drink beer and shit because of that.
Oh, wait,
is
really?
Yeast in beer? No, bread. What am I talking about? Wait, is there yeast
it's in beer? It's a living thing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Okay. I did not know this.
Yeah, so anyway. Difficult sometimes. Difficult to cohabitate maybe a little bit.
Yes, I would imagine.
I identified with Lloyd is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I was going to say and for Lloyd, too, because I was thinking about the poor cat.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I think story-wise, we've hit all the stuff that we can. We've built it up for you. So these bunch of random weirdos who take drug trials for a living find out that they have somewhat mundane drug-related superpowers, and over the course of the book... land on deciding to use them for good, right? More or less.
More or less.
And then there's obviously some supervillains and some love interests and a cat.
And I'd like to mention one more aspect, which did you read the afterword stuff?
Like the author note?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So this probably didn't occur to Rob, although it might have seemed a little odd while he was reading this. First, early in the book, there's a conversation about how fate and karma are two entirely different things, which I thought was interesting because that was kind of a little bit of a throwback to the book Fated, which was also an excellent book. But a character from Fated makes an appearance, two appearances, I believe, in this book. You know, they're inconsequential, and if you haven't read them, I don't think it's really going to take anything away from it, but god damn it, it was a nice little surprise.
Ooh, was it the redhead?
Yes.
Very nice.
Yes, very, very nice. So that was, I was like giddy with excitement, because I'm just that silly sometimes, when I came across those parts in the book.
I always dig character crossovers. I think they're always a good idea.
This one, god, it was, I loved it. But it was a little unexpected based on the fact that they have these powers which are, you know, derived from science, you know, just from medicine that's made and the amount that they've taken in and stuff. And then there's a character that's not at all. So, you know what I mean? It was like a supernatural kind of crossover.
Yeah.
Totally, totally cool. But it was a little unexpected because it didn't take place. Like when you read the Christopher Moore books, you know, all those take place in the same realm. And they're all supernatural. So you don't, when you something like that happens, you're looking for it. You're waiting for it. I wasn't expecting it in this book.
It's cool. But he had crossovers in other books, too. I remember when we interviewed him. Was it Lucky Bastard? There was a crossover?
I believe so. God, that's so long ago. Yes, yeah. Though, I think so.
Because I know we talked about it with him.
Yep. He also mentioned something else. I've read a couple of reviews, you know, that S.G. Brown has posted and stuff. Every time I see the word sci-fi, I keep forgetting that this technically could be considered a sci-fi book.
Yeah, I guess it qualifies.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, but it's weird, dude, because I'd like read a review and I'd like, sci-fi, what? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, I guess. And then like 2 days later, I'd see him share another, you know, another newspaper or magazine it was in, and I'd go, sci-fi, what the? Oh, yeah, I guess this. Like, I continue to forget that it's actually technically science fiction.
What would you categorize it as? Or like, what genre would you were you mentally kind of keeping it in?
Oh, I don't know. Let me look through my Richard Thomas catalog of genres and see what I can come up with. Mystical realism. No, I don't.
Transgender fiction.
Yeah, transgender fiction. That was one of them. Yeah, erectile. I don't know.
Erectile fantasy.
I mean, I thought of it as, you know, obviously satire is what first comes to mind. So that's, but beyond that, I didn't bother breaking it into, because it wasn't really supernatural. They were taking these pills and it was giving them powers, but I don't know, it just didn't strike me as science fiction-y at all.
Yeah, yeah. I see it more as just like, yeah, like satire or literary fiction with like a one weird twist to it. Whatever you want to call that. But anyway, yeah, I agree.
All right, do you have any quotes?
I have four.
All right, why don't you kick off? I've got a couple. So we can kind of go back and forth. I just have to find the ones that I didn't do already.
All right. This was, I think, towards the beginning of the book, and it's just kind of a reflection on the idea of them becoming superheroes. And it could almost be like jacket cover material, and you'll understand when I read it. We are like pharmaceutical soldiers fighting on the front lines of medical science to defend your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of antidepressants.
I like that one. This one is just it's just a brilliant little line. They're all having, and this is from early on in the book, they're all having lunch, the band of misfits. And the waiter comes up and asks if they're ready to order, and it says, everyone looks at Frank, who stares at the menu like it's written in Hatfield, and he's a McCoy.
Oh, they're at a vegetarian restaurant, right? And he's really upset.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that was good. Here's one that relationship oriented. Maybe I'm just in a relationship focus right now. I don't know why, but like the men and woman, the man versus woman quotes jumped out at me, I think, in this book a lot. When you're a man, sometimes it's best to just quit while you're behind.
Yeah. Yep. That's awesome. I kind of like this whole passage, so it's a decent sized paragraph. I wish I had an editor, someone to cut out all of the bad parts of my life and just leave the bits that make me look good. While we're at it, I could use a good musical score too, something fun and playful like the soundtrack from Pulp Fiction or the Blues Brothers. But since I don't have a 24-hour DJ and I'm stuck with the uncut version of my life, I just have to try to figure out what the hell is going on and hope I haven't been dosed with LSD or become delusional.
Another relationship-themed one. Men have been justifying and explaining themselves to women for centuries. Preach it, brother.
Yep. I'm not going to read this one, but goddammit, the whole passage on explaining where the term pass the buck comes from.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that 99% of people think that it actually means to hand someone else a dollar, which makes no sense in its actual context.
Yeah, that was actually one of the cool things. One of the characters, Blaine, which we haven't really mentioned, drops little trivia or just like factoids throughout. So like during any conversation that he's a part of, he'll just chime in with, oh, did you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's either about something in the conversation or just something completely random. But those are always very interesting things and probably great for Livius, who only learns from fiction books. So
It's where I learn everything I know.
That's right. Last quote. There are no heroes, Lloyd, only villains and liars. There was like a longer thought behind that, but that was kind of the, I feel like I tend to have a quote. I overquote and lose the meaning of the quote. So I tried to keep that just to like the basic. So, pretty cool. He was talking to one of the villains and that was the villain's perspective on part of the conversation.
So there we have it, another S.G. Brown book. We're probably S.G. Brown free on reading for another year or so.
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll probably have him on for an episode for an interview if he agrees to it. But what do you think about doing a wrap-up? Because we still do those, right?
Yes, we still do wrap-ups, and I'm aware that we do wrap-ups. I know that.
All right.
I am happy to go first. What is there to say about this book? I mean, we talked about how kind of odd and quirky it is. It's funny. It's endearing. It's actually a little sad in parts. But that's all of S.G. Brown's books, I think, have kind of covered all those bases. I mean, it's just done in such a witty, funny, and entertaining way. I mean, I've been in love with this guy since Breathers, and this book has definitely not slowed that love down at all. It's just great stuff. It's light, fun reading. I read this in the equivalent of two sittings, basically, and it just flies by, and then you have to just wait and wait and wait for another one. So it's another excellent S.G. Brown book, 5 stars.
5 stars from Liv. Here, I was thinking about S.G. Brown and how I would describe his writing to someone who I was trying to interest in one of his books, and satire obviously is the key word, I think. Comedic satire, comical satire, humorous satire, something like that. But he really does social commentary very well. If you think about some of the books, at least we've read, you know, Big Egos was more or less you could take a drug that made you temporarily a celebrity from history, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We read Lucky Bastard, which was there was these people who had the ability to like absorb good or bad luck from people, and there was a whole thing with that. So he takes high concepts like luck or like fame or almost digs into a Polanyi style analysis of something that happens in society, like, you know, medication and pharmaceutical companies and how, I mean, this is really kind of a stab at how, and it's blatantly talked about several times in the book, like the drugs that we take to make us better do almost as much damage as they do good. So if I take one drug, a side effect for that might be this other thing, which means I have to take this other drug, which gives me a side effect that, you know, and on and on. And I guess you would hope almost that you have the magical mix of side effects that, like, you know, three or four drugs would take care of each other. So he's got a great way of taking real social issues and just putting a really weird spin on them. But he has such a great structure for what really matters to us. So the characters in the books, all we're just looking at their lives and how everybody's got, you know, complementary struggles. And so we all have the successes and failures of our life, and we all have romantic troubles and stuff like that. So the focus of the book isn't the weird things that go on, like the drugs and the superpowers and all that. That's more the catalyst for change. But really what's going on is we're seeing Lloyd, and we're seeing how he has a certain level of happiness with his life. He's got this friend and girl, these friends and his girlfriend, and how when things change, his reactions make him better or worse and that type of thing. So, like, Brown's great at just writing a real life story and just putting a weird twist on it with things that are, you know, taking a stab at what happens in society. So it's always very interesting. It's entertaining. And you really get something out of an actual story. It's not like someone's just trying to write something funny. So I know I got way too academic about this, but I want to defend the quality and the meaning behind what he does, because it's not just like a jokey, funny book. And of course, that's what is easy to talk about. So probably we talk a lot about that, but like, just writes a solid story. There was parts that I was like tearing up because it was really sad. Other parts that I was laughing because it was really funny. So overall, it's just like, if you want to read a true story, but just, you know, be entertained by it as well, and like maybe made to think a little bit, this is just like a perfect book to read. So I'm going to go with Livius. This is 5 stars.
Wow. That was a very, very insightful look into it. But after you talked about tearing up, all I could think about was like a bitch.
I did tear up like a bitch. That's exactly like how I teared up.
Like a bitch. So, see, I tear up sometimes. I just don't broadcast it. So. Yeah,
I cry all great the time. Stuff.
Like a bitch. I close this and I go, oh, that was such a good book. And I'm like, motherfucker, it's gonna be like another year plus before I get to read another S.G. Brown book, which I realize is so fucking selfish. But that's the kind of emotion that his writing evokes out of me, is like, I want another one right now.
I agree. But we have to be thankful that he doesn't just, like, Patterson book mill that shit, that he actually puts, like, his blood, sweat, and tears into it.
Yep. I mean, there's lots of writers we like, and when we know they're coming out with a new book, like, we have that conversation, right? Like, hey, are we going to review the new so-and-so book? And, you know, oftentimes it's a yes, sometimes it's no, you know, for whatever reason. And, like, S.G. Brown's kind of a no-brainer for us, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So. Brown's... solid. He's never done us wrong.
Nope, not yet, but there's still time, Mr. Brown. There's still time.
So what else we got going on?
We have an announcement we have to make. A sad, sad, heartbreaking announcement.
Yeah, so we were really excited with the upcoming... This is just like the weirdest thing. So we were really excited with the upcoming AWP event or conference that we had our own event planned. And it was that we were going to do, and you'll know by the past tense that this is going in a bad direction, a dodgeball event where we had a team of people. We had a team of 8 people that we were, and we had challenged the folks from Broken River Books and Eraserhead Press to a dodgeball I wouldn't say tournament, but a match. Let's say that.
Yeah, we're not up for more than one game. It was always going to be one game.
And we had a venue, we had a time and a date and everything. It was all set up. Everything was in the works and good to go, locked in. We made an event on Facebook and everything. Then tragedy struck, and we lost our venue for dodgeball. So it appears that in this, I'm not going to say 11th hour, but maybe 9th and a half hour, that our dodgeball event will not be taking place.
Yeah, I part of me is greatly saddened. The other part of me is kind of glad that I didn't start like going to the gym. And I was talking to a guy that I work with, and I was like, listen, what kind of training do I have to do for dodgeball? So after the laughter subsided, he had actually given me some tips, and I was like, I'm totally going to do this, and I totally didn't do it. So I'm kind of glad I didn't now, but I'm still sad that it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I had that thought too, that it was like, I don't want to be the guy that puts together this dodgeball thing and then just gets his ass completely handed to him in the actual dodgeball event.
Yep.
Livius, if people haven't noticed this yet, Livius has a very strong, I don't know if it's competitive streak, but he does not like to lose.
Seriously, man. I was reading articles on dodgeball. I messaged you. I was like, dude, there's rules. There's actual rules to this game. Like, I was reading the rules and strategies, but it's okay. It's okay. It's going to be a little downer for AWP, but I will survive. Rob will survive. We'll still be there.
Yeah.
That actually gives us some more free time to hang out with people. So if you're interested in hanging out, hit us up on Facebook, shoot us an email. Maybe we can have a nice lunch with some folks that day instead of fucking dodging balls, which must be what it's like living in your neighborhood now that I think about it.
It's every day I walk down the street to get some coffee, I'm dodging balls.
Yeah, maybe you would have been better at this than I anticipated you would be.
You're like, man, it is uncanny Rob's ability to dodge those balls. He must have a superpower. It's like he has a superpower.
Oh, yeah, so at any rate, AWP is still happening, regardless of our inability to secure a venue for dodgeball. So, again, seriously, if you want to hang out, hit us up. We'll have some free time while we're there. We actually have lots of free time. I think we're only two events that we're going to so far. So one of them a public event, the other one a very private event.
Because if there's something I personally love, it is exclusivity. If I had my way, I would do the awesomest things, and everybody would know about it, but only a certain group of people would be able to participate.
Nice. I'm happy with that as long as I continue to be part of said group of people. So I haven't alienated myself from stuff you're doing yet. Yet.
No. You're integral, dude. I couldn't make it out there in the world without you.
Oh, Rob, I'm tearing up. Like a bitch.
Like a bitch.
Like a bitch. So,
so speaking of tearing up like a bitch.
Yeah.
The literary world is saddened. The passing of Terry Pratchett, who died at what I'm considering a young age, like mid-60s, right?
Yes. Yeah, he was, I think, 66. Yes, 66.
Yeah. Kind of a surprise. Have you read any Terry Pratchett stuff?
You know, the only, because he did a lot of sci-fi, of which I'm not a huge fan, but to be fair, I haven't tried a lot. I have not read a lot of Terry Pratchett. The only thing I've read from Terry Pratchett was, actually, it turned me on to Neil Gaiman. Good Omens was the only Terry Pratchett book that I read, and that was just fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, I have not read any Terry Pratchett, and I'm going to admit, and this this is not easy to admit because it makes me seem a little bit foolish, that I saw on Twitter Terry Pratchett died, and I'm like, oh, that sucks, you know. You never want to see, you know, anybody die, much less someone whose name is familiar to you. And then I just didn't think much of it, and then I'm on Facebook, and there's all these pictures of this dude. And RIP, and I'm like, oh, I always thought Terry Pratchett was a chick.
God. Oh, there you go.
So And I didn't want to be the insensitive guy that was like, oh, hey, just found out Terry Pratchett, not a chick.
That's terrible. That's awful. I didn't read a lot of the articles on it, mostly because I wasn't very familiar with him. But I think he may have had Alzheimer's, which also I think is a little early at that.
Seems like a young age for that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Early onset Alzheimer's from 2007. So that's a rough way to go, man. That's 10 years. I mean, he was in his 50s.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So that's a little rough, but. Rest in peace, Terry Pratchett. Oddly enough, his full name was Sir Terence David John Pratchett. So
he was actually knighted.
Yep.
Oh, what do you think we got to do to get knighted? What if we sent a letter?
I think we have to be British. Is what I think we have to do.
Just hear me out. We get some booked letterhead. And we print out a nice letter explaining to the Queen, because obviously we're going to explain directly to the Queen. Hey, check this out. 2012, we won this Podcast of the Year award. This is horror. 2013, Anthology of the Year. 2014, Podcast of the Year again. We've won 3 awards in the UK.
That's very true. I don't know if I still think we have to be British. And we know that I'm not going to pass off a British accent. I don't know if you're able to, but we've heard mine. It's not passable.
All I'm saying is, in order to be a saint, you have to have 3 miracles. So I'm thinking knighthood, 3 awards. That should be good. My British accent would probably be pretty terrible, now that you mention it.
You know, when you were talking about, reading about Pratchett's death and then seeing all these pictures, I thought you were just mourning the loss of a fellow hat wearer.
Dude had some good hats.
Yeah, every time I see him in a picture, he's got a hat on, so.
That's true. I did actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I did mentally take note of, there was one picture where I was like, that is a fantastic hat. Well, I guess are we not holding our breath for knighthood then? Is that what you're trying to get
me to understand? That's pretty much what I'm saying. Of all the ridiculous things that I think we can actually get to, knighthood is not one of them.
Well, not with that attitude. All right, no knighthood for us, I guess.
All right, do we have anything else? Oh, can we talk about, for people who didn't see the book podcast, can we talk about our next book that we're going to read?
Utter outrage of what the next book is. Yeah, please.
So it was time to do Wheel and Meet again. So people who are regular listeners of the show will remember, but I will, for anybody who has missed it, I will mention how this works. We decided we don't read enough bestsellers. So we have a system in place where we take the top 20 best-selling books, and we put them on a wheel, and we spin the wheel, and whatever it lands on is what we read. So our first one was, what was it called? The Lestat book. Is it called Lestat?
Prince Lestat?
Prince Lestat is what we read. Rob was just fucking thrilled that he had to read another Anne Rice book. So he had mentioned... I'm not sure if he was even joking that I may have cheated to this book, because we actually talked about reviewing it before we came out. It came out, we really didn't pay much attention to it, so it was a little long in the teeth by the time we got to it. But it was like number 18 on the New York Times bestseller list. So we don't actually have a wheel. I found a website. It's called randompick.org or something, where you just put in a little list. And you do this. Now, it's been, I don't know, 6 weeks or so since we've used it. So I go in there. I spend so much fucking time on this thing, because I was trying to do it from my phone. So I had a busy work week coming up, and I was like, I need to get a start. So I'm just going to do this while I'm sitting at lunch. So I copy and paste over the 20 titles and synopses of the top 20 New York Times bestselling list books. So I get to the website. It's got to be one per line. I recut the whole thing, right? And I tell Rob, I go, I'm going to video this my selection. And he says, oh, because I accused you of cheating or whatever. And I said, yeah, that, and I thought it'd be fun to post in the book podcast listening group.
Yep.
So I do it, and here's some of the things that were on the list. So there were a couple of sequels, which can be tricky to review, kind of like the Prince Lestat was.
Mm-hmm.
There were quite a few very, very chick lit books. I mean, stuff by Danielle Steele, and you know, so I go, oh, this could be really hairy. And down there at the fucking bottom, like number 17, is a goddamn Star Wars book. And I swear when I was copying and pasting these over, I was like, this would probably be the worst thing that could get picked from this list, aside from like a James Patterson, you know, collaborative novel. And sure enough, man, I hit that button, bang. It goes right to Heir of the Jedi, which God is what we're going to be reviewing next week. Well, I was concerned for many reasons. There have been, and I don't have a number, but I have to guess probably 40 or 50 continuing Star Wars books. And up until the announcement of the new movie, they were all canon, which meant that stuff, you know, like you probably had to have a better idea of what went on in some of them to kind of keep up with what was going on. This book takes place in between the first two Star Wars movies, so in between Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back. So you've seen those, Rob? Yes.
I've seen all six movies, yes.
Okay. As have I, contrary to popular belief.
Oh, and if you want to feel my age a little bit, I actually, the first movie I ever remember being in when I was like 5 years old was, I remember falling asleep in the theater and waking up at the end of Return of the Jedi when there's like the big lightsaber duel.
Oh, you got to see the Ewoks, huh?
I think I fell asleep for most of the Ewoks.
Yeah, I if we're going to do that, here's my throwback. I think Empire Strikes Back was the second movie I ever saw in the theater. Superman was the first one, the Christopher Reeves movie. But Star Wars I saw, there was, I think we may have talked about this on the podcast, maybe in year one, in Chicago, and I'm sure in other places, the first cable service was called On TV, and it was one channel of movies and stuff. So that eventually spawned off into being more than that. But I mean, I remember their second channel was Sports Vision. But we had that, and the first, I'm pretty sure it was the first pay-per-view event ever. I'm pretty sure it was the first one for On TV, at least, was Star Wars, which I did not see in the theater. It came out when I was, you know, like three. So I did get to see that on a black and white television. Seriously. And it was like $20 to watch that.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
it was a lot. Siren. Haven't had enough of those in the episode. Yeah.
This was pre-VCR. Not like VCRs didn't exist, but at the time, like, Elvis had a VCR in, like, his airplane. You didn't have one in your house. So there was really no way to see a movie unless it was being run on TV. And at that time, big movies like this just weren't. So,
Jesus, but Elvis was alive?
Pretty sure Elvis was still alive in 76, right?
Elvis died in 77. Don't ask me why I know that.
Oh, that's fucking Mr. Trivial Pursuit. But yeah, so at any rate, we're going to read a first-person Luke Skywalker story. almost 20% of the way in, and I'm going to be honest, so far, it's not that great.
Who knows? It's funny, I was actually talking to someone at work, and I was trying to explain the concept of doing the Wheel of Meat without calling it the Wheel of Meat. And and I said that it randomly came up with... I didn't even tell him what it was chose, but I mentioned that, you know, some of the types of books, and I mentioned that there was a Star Wars book on the list, and he was like, oh, dude, you know how many Star Wars books I've read? And he was all excited, and I was like, huh. I was like, we need to get him on as a guest or something.
Part of my issue with this was back in, God, it was probably like 1991 or 92 when they allowed other people to write, when like Lucas was approving books to be written, because I read the first two, I think. And I'll be honest, at the time it was kind of fun to go back and see these characters and their futures, kind of like where they go. This one's a little bit of a letdown, and I have this has happened with other things I've read, and even, I think it's some movies in some cases. Going back to see a character's life in between what you already know is just not as exciting.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, I know they're not going to kill Luke Skywalker off regardless of when it takes place or whatever. And he's the storyteller, so you kind of automatically know that he survives the story. But, like, I know what happens to him after this. So, and it seems also, and we'll probably talk about this ad nauseum. Yeah. We'll talk about this, I'm sure, ad nauseum next week. But seems like the guy's trying really, really hard to make reference to every single thing you could possibly know from the Star Wars movie.
Oh, that's the worst, man. It's like...
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, you're really building me up to enjoy this book.
This is gonna... You're gonna fucking hate this, God. I have come to a conclusion, though, since both of these books were unfavorable. Well, first, my first thought was, I went back through the list, and of 20 books, I saw three that I was kind of like, oh, this might be interesting, and the rest of them were I mean, like I said, there was one of those Vegas books from Patterson. It's got to be like the third or fourth one, like Private Vegas or whatever.
Right.
There was Clive Cussler doing the same kind of thing where he was co-authoring something, and all I remember of Clive Cussler was like 700 pages of dense military text. So I couldn't imagine that was going to be really great. Like I said, a ton of chick lit. Out of 20, there were really only like three that would have been like, oh, okay, this is cool that we're going to review this. But the first two have come from spots 15 through 20, I think. And it's weird because even the New York Times bestseller list does not give these books any credit. There's 1 through 15 with synopses. And then 16 through 20 says also selling. And it's 16 through 20. So I think we need to drop 16 through 20 from the next Wheel of Meat.
Well, I was going to challenge you to just put them in reverse order and see if that affects it at all.
Oh, yeah. I could do that, too. I just found it kind of odd that and it's a web page, so I get it if this was in the newspaper and they had to cut down the bottom five for space. It's a fucking web page. They scroll infinitely. And they just also sell like 16 through 20.
It's not like the world. It's like there's only so much land. On the internet, there's as much internet as you need.
Yeah, so at any rate, that's our next episode. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm not looking forward to it. It's going to be fun to see Rob just hate on something so much. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I'm going to just... I think this might be the first book I rage quit.
Oh, no, you can't. We can't do that.
Or rage finish,
you made it through Haruki Murakami.
Oh, yeah. Haruki Murakami. I just want to fly to Japan and beat the shit out of that guy. Hey, I just had a thought.
Yes? Yes?
Going back a little bit to Less Than Hero, and I don't want to open up a whole big conversation about this, but have you ever seen the movie Mystery Men?
No.
No. All right. Essentially, Mystery Men's a movie that has, like, Ben Stiller and Paul Rubens and Janine Garofalo and a bunch of people, and it's a... All these people who they're real life superheroes who have lame kind of powers. So I'm just drawing a little parallel to Less Than Hero a little bit. But they actually do kind of end up taking on a bad guy and saving the day and stuff like that. So it was something that a girl I dated it was like one of her favorite movies, and I thought it was okay, but I'm not really a big Ben Stiller fan. Hank Azaria is in it as well. So just thought about it. Because it's like, you know, a bunch of superheroes kind of thing, lame superheroes.
Who is Hank Azaria? I recognize all the other names you mentioned. I know what movie you're talking about. I can kind of picture the cover of it, but I've never seen it.
Doesn't he do voices on The Simpsons, Hank Azaria?
Oh. Maybe. I don't watch The Simpsons.
What?
Yeah. Did you really think that I'd watch The Simpsons?
Maybe. I mean, but it's been on for so long. I figured that you at some point had watched The Simpsons. It's almost like impossible not to have.
I believe I've seen a couple of episodes. If I had to go that route, I'd much rather watch Family Guy.
Oh, well, he does voices for... I recognize him. He does so much Simpsons. Yeah. He does Moe's voice, Chief Wiggum, Carl, Comic Book Guy, Apu, Lou, Cletus. Yeah, he does a ton of Simpsons voices. I was right. Boom.
Yeah, I recognize him. I pulled up his picture, so I know I've seen him in something that's not just his voice. Mm-hmm. I just can't pinpoint what that something is.
Well, it wasn't Mystery Men, apparently. But, anyway, I liked it. I thought it was a decent movie. I'd watched it a couple times, and I enjoyed it. But, Mystery Men. I'm going to say Less Than Hero, way better than Mystery Men.
Good. I was going to say it was Rob's throwback movie pick of the week. All right. So come back next week for what promises to be an exciting review of a Star Wars book, Heir to the Jedi. Until then,
I'm going to be so embarrassed to like post that on Facebook.
But dude, here's the embarrassing part. Maybe you'll fucking love it.
Oh, God, I hope not.
All right, well, we'll find out next week. Until then, I'm Olivia Snedden.
I'm Rob Olson. Keep reading.